Good morning, good morning, good morning from Wise Words with One Gun Show on Blog Talk Radio. Hey, man, I want you guys to know that God is good all the time, and all the time God is good. Allow him to lead you through some of the things that you find yourself faced with, right? A lot of things we need not to jump, you know, someone's bones with instead of talking to them, right? And so I got this young man that is, we're going to go visit today in the county jail. And a reason I'm saying that, his mom is not, you know, in her best space. And she's lashing out on those that are helping. And so you lash out on folks, but you don't talk to folks to get reckoning or to get advice or to just have someone to listen to you. And when you don't do that, you find yourself in spaces and places that are uncomfortable. With that being said, good morning, good morning.
Testing, testing, 1, 2, 3. What's up with it? Attention sack artists. You trying to get your music played? R&B, jazz, hip-hop, and comedy. Spoken word as well. Send your MP3 tracks to DJ1Gone at yahoo.com. That's DJ1Gone at yahoo.com. Make sure you give a call to 347-205-9722 or log on to blogtalkradio.com. Testing, testing, 1, 2, 3. What's up with it? Attention.
Last night, me and Mr. Marvell took three young men to a basketball game, and it was a great game. It was so great that the victors won by 1 point, which would be the Sacramento Kings to light the beam. And so we was walking outside, and I really got a chance to see what that beam looked like. It looked like the beam went out of space. And so shout out to all the King fans. Shout out to the Sacramento King organization for a great win for the city. And without further ado, I have Mr. Marvell for you. Hey, Mr. Marvell, could you break off one of your spoken word pieces this morning to uplift us or to give us some insight of what spoken word and poetry is, man?
Well, thank you for the opportunity, and good morning to you, and good morning to our listening audience. I was just thinking about the piece that I think is pertinent to what we talk about regularly. This piece is called "Let Us." In my heart, there is a want for these people of mine to open their eyes and draw a clear and defining line between what's left and what's right, what's cold and what's hot, what's really important and what really is not. For the values we now praise and rarely ever choose to question have woven their way through our culture and society by the mere power of suggestion. Yes, of course, our capitalistic system has made us accustomed to having things. Yet it is contrary to our character to cater to frills and well-marketed bling, glamorizing cars, clothes, and jewelry, and other false impressions of wealth, rehearses illness to imitate wellness and eroding our emotional and spiritual health. Let our desires not exceed our budgets in the stores and malls in which we shop, buying glued together shoes and man-made materials at $150 a pop. Let us cease to allow designers claiming to know what on us looks good for us to strut looking rich and prosperous to the backdrop of poverty in our neighborhood. Let us cease to allow those others to cleverly market us their wares while our dollars fund all their ventures and for all their trips we pay their fares. Let us finally begin to reason that most of these values are just a mirage, like having a $40,000 vehicle parked on the street instead of a garage. Let us relax from all these tensions and no longer continue to pretend that what defines our worth and purpose, it has to glow from without rather than glow from within. like the richness of the grape that's ripened. Beneath its skins belies its wine. It is what's beneath our shells and skins, where our majesty best shines. So men, let your principles become your values, giving our children more than just a clue that the woman is not the sole guardian, even if she gets more attention than you. Men, let's recognize, not compromise, and assume our roles as leaders again, forsaking the making of dollars for the sake of making more sense, so our women won't tell their children that they're also the men. Let us become more humble to our weaknesses and look to one another to convey our support, and stop copping out the drug usage and allowing our fate to be decided in a court. Oh, man, I lost the last part of it. But I'll stop there. So let us decide to not allow others to make our future decisions and put ourselves in a position where we're at the mercy of someone's next decision. And I'll stop there because I forgot the last part. It's almost at the end, but I forgot. So it's early in the morning for me. And I know excuses. I should have it, but.
Hey, look, this is what they tell us in radio, right? We don't know that you got it. You could have stopped right there. We'd have still clapped our hands. So until you tell us that you forgot it, did you think we knew you forgot it?
Yeah.
Okay, so, hey, well, man, wonderful job. Wonderful job, man. I appreciate that. That right there hit me real square in the dairy there, right? And so today's topic is fentanyl, the new high. People know this is a deadly drug, but still use it to get high. So we're asking for our callers to call in if they've experienced this or have a loved one that has experienced this and tell us why this new high is at an all-time demand when you know it can lay you down in the ground where you won't make another sound. Ooh, we... Hey, so Marvell, man, I know you are AOD. I know you are AOD counselor. I know that you know the ins and outs about drug usage, not just fentanyl, just drug usage, alcohol, tobacco, all of it's a drug. And so, you know, when we talk about these necessary topics, people wince. Right, they wince when we talk about these topics because these topics are very, very vital in our community, and they are taking over the community as well.
So we have, I'm hoping maybe we can get our partner Weedell in because he's getting his feet wet in the field. Yet. We've talked about this before. We did our broadcast on KDEE, Hip Hop After Dark, about it. And the one thing that I think resonated with a lot of people is just what you said, Tim. Despite the fact that all the reports say that people are dying from it, people are acting just like back in the day when I was back in the 60s when some diabolical folk infiltrated our communities with heroin, and you could buy $5 worth of heroin and it'll keep you high all day. The idea to intravenously inject it into your system to get the most potency, that when someone had some heroin that was close to pure and somebody OD'd off of it, people were trying to find that dope man who got that, even though somebody just died. So it's something very eerie about one who seeks out death and wants to flirt with death. Now, getting high is one thing, but flirting with death is something that's very, very difficult to understand, and I dare to say difficult for someone to explain, but it exists, where people are seeking out a drug back in the day, they called it McDonald's spoon. And then McDonald's stopped making McDonald's spoons because they were using it to measure heroin with back then. But it don't even take, it takes about a quarter of a McDonald's spoon of this particular drug to end a life. And it's very, very disturbing to hear about young people dying of this drug. So at this point, it's kind of important for us to do what we've been doing throughout all of our broadcasts is ask questions themselves, put it to the floor and ask anybody who would flirt with something like this, just how much do you care about yourself? Do you care enough about yourself to not take the risk of losing your life for a sensation that may last only minutes, but your demise is final if you fail to do this? So that's kind of like in the nutshell for me what it is to consider. Is it a lie? Is it your life so unfavorable that you think that it's important enough to risk, or unimportant enough to risk your life for this sensation?
Wow. And so the number is 515-605-9861. That's 515-605-9861. So far, it's just me and Mr. Marvell on the line, and so we're going to hold the line and talk about these things. So here's one from me, right? A young man said, you know, the reason he does it because it takes him close to death. It takes him close to death, and then he snaps back and he's ready to do it again, right? And so that didn't make sense to me, but drugs don't make sense to me, right? And so when he told me that, I felt sorry for his soul. I felt sorry for his understanding. I felt sorry that he don't know, right? He don't know what he don't know. And so I don't know who introduced him to that drug, or was he introduced, or was he coerced to do the drug, or see, I don't know. But what I do know is now that he's hooked on it, he's stuck on it, right? And all he want to do is get high. And that is bad when you're only 19, 18, 19, and that's all you want to do. You don't have a way to supply yourself because you haven't even went and experienced a drug called work, a job, a career. You didn't sample that drug, right? You didn't sample that drug and go all out for it. But here it is, you sampling this other stuff, such as fentanyl, and you're stuck on it. And so if you're a user out there, I pray for you that you get understanding by some of the callers that may call in, some of the discussions and topics that might come out of one's mouth today, because what I find out is that a lot of times we be in our own way for to get healed, to build, to move forward, to advance. A lot of times we're in our way. And so if you're in your own way, I ask that you seek professional help. Don't go down on the corner and ask Johnny Bo, because Johnny Bo might not know. You understand me? He might give you something that doesn't explain correctly on how to beat this challenge that you're faced with. And so if you are one of them, please give us a call at 916-889-0105. That's 916-889-0105, or 916-410-1976. That's 916-410-1976. And these numbers are brothers that care about you, whether you're on drugs, whether you're faced with hardship, whether your mind is just playing tricks on you. These two numbers right here, if you hit them numbers, you'll have a decent conversation with decent people. So if you're in need to talk about certain things that are plaguing you and getting in your way from succeeding to being the best you can be, I suggest you call them two numbers. I'll get them numbers out again randomly. But what we want to do is be able to have support for you. And if I can't support you or Mr. Marville can't support you, we can refer you to others, right, that may can, because everybody can't touch everybody. And if you think you can, then you need to keep thinking, because what happens is people trust certain people to give certain information that may help them. And you might not be a trusted person, but you might have the information. And we just want to connect the dots, that's all. And so if you are someone that can help someone that's finding themselves in this position, I ask that you call in, give your number, and be a vessel of God. Be a vessel of God. It doesn't hurt to help. You heard what I said? I said it doesn't hurt to help, Mr. Marville.
Wow, that's well put. And it saddens me, on the one hand, that the young man shared that with you, that candor about what he gets out of that drug. But at the same time, that testimony speaks directly to deficiencies exist, especially in our culture. We struggle to have vision, to see beyond our current present circumstance and look into the future. And then sometimes what you see or what's being seen in the immediate, in your immediacy, in your presence, is something that is not very favorable. So it allows one maybe the idea to seek out that type of challenge and thrill. You know, because, again, I talk about energy all the time, and where we direct our energy oftentimes dictates where we'll end up in the midterm or the long term. However, I still have to acknowledge that midterm and long term thought process and vision is not something so common for us. So I understand when one tells you, yeah, I know I'm risking my life, and that the thrill of risking my life is part of the process. The thrill of risking my life is part of the process. And that speaks kind of deeply to me about what one, how one interprets themselves and their value to our culture or to this existence here. They're really defining that their value has not been defined to the point to where they don't feel they have anything to offer, so they don't feel they have anything to risk, so therefore they probably don't feel they have much to lose. It's sad, but it's pretty common.
I agree with that. I agree with that wholeheartedly. And, you know, one without a purpose is one still searching. One without a passion is one still searching. And so my thought is, before you go to sampling any drugs or trying to find a way to cope with everyday life, find your passion. Find your purpose. Let that be your starting point. Because what I do know, if you have a passion, some people have a passion to do the utmost things, right? They have a passion and a purpose that doesn't make I don't want to speak for them like that, but I know if you find a purpose and stick to the plan and work the plan, your purpose will guide you to what you are looking for. You're looking for peace. You're looking for happiness. You're looking, not saying that you're not going to go through some ups and downs. That's life. But you won't go through as many ups and downs. And so my call to you, as the listeners worldwide, is that if you see or know of a person that is on drugs, please lend a helping hand. I know it gets rough in some areas where if you lend a hand and you help out, the person that you're helping seems to hurt you. I understand. I've seen that and I've been done that way, right? And so I always think that God gave me a second chance, so why can't I get somebody else, right? And so when one doesn't recognize that, then you slide back. But you also refer to somewhere else. Try to find other sources that might be able to fill that void. Because what I do know, like I said, everybody cannot reach everybody. Everybody cannot reach everybody. And how I know is some family members call me about certain situations with young folks. I've tried this. I've tried that. I've did this. And we are here. We even did that. Still can't reach him. Can I send him over to you? Send him over to me. First thing I'm going to do is show him love and get to know that person and find out what they want and how they're going to attempt to do and get to what they want. And then the other thing is I'm going to listen. I'm going to listen because a lot of times people are so hurt that they need to be heard about the position they've put themselves in. And so I can't judge. We can't judge. What we can do is assist in the moment. And then when the moment is right and the person really, the light goes off in their head and they say, hey, you know, I'm tired. I want to do something different. I want to do something new. I want to change myself. Then change is about to happen because it's self that brings that change about. And so I've been out there myself. I've been out there, you know, I've been out there. And so when I was out there, I said the same thing. Lord, change my walk. Now, I might not have been the druggie, but I was serving the drugger. I was the drugger, right? And so it's no difference. It's no difference. I was high about money. I was high about the status. I was high on how girls and those around me would look at me with this paper in my pocket and coming out my hand, right? Being able to go spend whenever I wanted to, however I wanted to, knowing that I can go back to the block and get it back, right? And so that high right there cost me a lot of pain and hardship with my mama, my grandmama, my family, you know. And I think that once I got myself together, I tried to show improvement of self to my people. And, you know, even then I've seen where I straighten up. I've walked a straight line, and I ain't been back to the old me, right? And it's hard for people that seen you out there doing what you've done, and you hurt them by hurting other people by selling drugs and making, you know, it's hard to get that relationship back. It's not a lot of times you're going to see me and any one of my cousins. I'm the oldest of Reverend J.D. Grandchildren, Reverend J.D. Griffin grandchildren. I'm the oldest boy. I'm his first grandson. And I have 30 or 40 other young cousins, male cousins. And you will never see me and them in a setting unless they was invited from one side and I was invited from the other. Not because we discussed being at this place. Not because We, not because we discussed being at this place or invited each other to this place. We just happen to be at the same place in the same building. We gonna say hi cordially, but we won't even sit at the same table and eat. And it won't be my fault because I didn't reach my hand across the table many a times and got it slapped or chopped off. And so I used to have a hard time with that, right? I used to have a hard time with that. Of saying, you know, my own people, my own family, we got the same bloodline, and we don't even fellowship together. I fellowship and find friends that are family more tighter than my family in the streets, right? I find more conversation and love in the streets, right, with the people I met in the streets. Not saying that they're on drugs or they're doing bad. I'm just saying, this is where I found them out in the community, right? And so it's hard to move forward when you have that type of situation. And so that right there is a lot of reasons why a lot of other people get high, because they don't have relationships that they thought they should have. People haven't heard them most of their lives. And so They ready to go get high and sit out there on Skid Row and just say, hey, this is my family right here, because we can get high together, we can argue together, but we still have a relationship. And so what I'm saying and all that I'm saying is that a lot of relationships you have to force. And if you have to force them, they're not really relationships. Mr. Marvell.
Well, that was a well-rounded summation of a lot of things. There's a lot to unpack in what you just shared. What occurred to me was your admittance of what you were involved in, far as and this might sound new to some people, drug usage. Drug usage is not just limited to somebody injecting it or inserting it into their body for a sensation. Drug usage is also because you're using it to get money. So you have drug sales to get money, then you have drug into the body to change how you think or feel or emotion. And then you have these organizations who get money to treat or to check, to meet the challenge of drug usage. Everybody's using drugs. So drug usage has pervaded our general society and has become so socially accepted in so many ways that now even the community that's designed to address the challenge of recovery from drug usage is falling off. So now what we have more than anything else is the drug seller and the intravenous, I won't say that because that I don't want to be misinterpreted. The inner body drug usage is most like a high percentage of what's going on right now. Now, when you talked about how people can help, I think it's important to understand that there is a process called enabling, and it's a serious process. It's a serious process to examine and to be sure that if you are able to see how not to do it, then that's the practice that's recommended. What I mean by enabling is, here you have someone that you care about, and you see them, and your heart pours out to them, goes out to want for them to be who you may think they should be or who you will hope they will become. And so in that spirit, people do things like they take people in, let them rest up, feed them, give them encouraging words, and maybe give them a little dough when they go back out, hoping that they'll go and just buy cigarettes or whatever, you know, but whatever they, when they leave your covering, they've only convalesced to go back to their old behavior. So what you did was you preserved them for another round. So it's this type of mindset that had, for when I was out there, that's what I observed a lot of, and that's what I experienced a lot of, was the people pour their hearts out because they feel something. But remember that the person that you're feeling something has been ignoring their own feelings, has been anesthetizing their own feelings, has been sedating their own feelings. So they don't even feel what you feel. So that imbalance creates a system where whenever they don't have any conscience about pulling on you, anytime they get in the jackpot, and you have a good conscience and a good spirit to assist on what you think is assistance, but what you also, you're perpetuating the system that they're in. So I'd like to point out how important it is to, when someone comes to you and you know that they've been out there and they come and they pull at your heartstrings, stop and recognize that the best thing you can do is to create an accountability system for anything that you do for them. So if you take them in to let them rest, when they get up, they got to clean something. They have to have a responsibility. They have to have a task that balances what you're doing so that accountability becomes a part of your relationship with them, because they will remain unaccountable as long as you permit it. So I want to put a little emphasis on how we've learned, me as an ex-drug user, how I've learned and how my structure, I even started an organization when I was in Ohio known as 4C. 4C stands for Community Consciousness for Courage and Creativity, and what designed to do was to teach loved ones, family members, and neighbors how not to enable someone who is caught up. Because when that enabling system kicks in, you become the host and they continue to be the parasite. What say ye?
Hey, man. So as we were speaking, man, and as you pointed out, that right there, the enabling, that's what that right there, I have that right here in my house, right? It ain't about drugs. It's about behavior, right? It don't have to be about fentanyl to enable one, or drugs. Enabling a bad behavior, enabling someone when you know they're supposed to clean up their room once they get up out the bed, to make that bed up, straighten the room up, get ready for school and go to school, but you allow them to just get up, brush your teeth, wash your face, and go to school. And you know that room ain't done, but you go do it every day. And so you're an enabler, and you give nothing to that person that's well worth them to have, because what they don't get is a chance to learn how to be better at being themselves, how to be better at being clean, how to be better at a work ethic. Because when you're cleaning up your room and you're cleaning up your spot, you're learning how to work. You're learning how to be of assistance to yourself. And so when you said enabling, it rang in my brain about some of the situations I find myself in and that I recognize. I've spoken to and about, but yet it still happens. And so I'm going to ask you this question before I invite Brother Joe into the conversation. I see he just called in. But I want to ask you a question, Brother Marvell. When you were out and about, were you waiting on somebody to hand you a handout, or were you a go-getter whether you was high or not, were you a go-getter to know that if I needed this, I would have to do this to achieve to get what I'm trying to get to? Or did you just wait and sit on the corner and say, okay, I know Jody, he's going to come up out of the plasma center. He's going to get $20 for giving plasma. I'm going to wait on Jody to get that $20. And I'm going to sit up on the Jody and see if I can get what I can get. Or just give me a little bit how that occurred in your lifetime out there and about.
Well, I was and it's a crude term, but I was a parasite. But I wasn't a parasite that waited on other people to hustle. I was a parasite that deprived other people of what they owned in order to suffice my usage. So I was a thief. And let me share this, that in my grooming and what I see that may not be present nowadays, in my grooming there were certain ethics and certain morals that were groomed in me that made it so that when I broke bad and decided that this is what I was going to do, I knew that I had to be responsible to make anything that I wanted to happen. And the means that I chose was, first, I was a robber, because we used to carry guns when I was back in the 60s. Everybody used to carry guns where I came from and rob each other and rob other places, but rob each other. And I put away the gun because I caught a case and they were trying to send me to the penitentiary for a long time. So I said, okay, I'm going to stop this gun thing, but I'm gonna still get out there and, again, deprive someone else of what they have earned in order to suffice what I thought I needed. So that was my method of approach. But I was still a parasite. So I don't want to try to minimize the fact that just because I didn't wait for the dude to go to get his plasma, get his 20, so we can cut it up, or I can trick him out of it or whatever, I wasn't like that with each other. Because, see, I was the kind of guy, I guess in my heart I knew that I shouldn't have been there, but I had enough cleverness to be able to stay there, except when I got to the penitentiary, of course. But I always kind of felt I was going to come out of that. As a matter of fact, I used to get a lot of money. So of the people that saw that I had a lot of money, they used to try to manipulate, call themselves manipulating me, working their hands to get me to share the dope with them. And what they didn't know was I welcomed that, because if I had to use all the dope that I got, I would have killed myself. So I needed somebody to share this stuff with. And they thought they was putting their hands down, working me. But when we got in the midst of it, I was always talking about redemption. I was talking about one of these days we're going to come up out of this. One of these days they're going to come up out of it. And you know what they used to tell me? Hey, man, why don't you hold that down, man? You're blowing my high. So I always was a little bit on the side of redemption and not locked in to the fate of being caught up for the rest of my life. But I don't want you to, anybody to ignore the fact that I was a parasite living off of other living things to suffice this want for a feeling. And that's what it was, a want for a feeling or a want to not feel what I was feeling. And that's where it all starts, is my feelings, how I felt or how I wanted to feel. And this drug seemed to have some sort of remedial action to that, even if it was only temporary. And the temporariness of it made it so that you had to keep on going back, to come back. And I stayed caught up until I got locked up or ran out of money. And it was usually locked up, because if I ran out of money, I would go get some more. So that's my response to that. I don't know if that's a clear response to what you asked me, but that was my course of action during my using time.
And I appreciate that truth, because some of these listeners that's out there that may be using needed to hear that, Mr. Marvell. And I appreciate your truth, right? And without further ado, I got Brother Joe for you. Brother Joe.
Yes, sir. How you doing this morning, fellas?
Blessed.
Hey,
hello?
Joe.
Hey, now, how
yes,
you
sir.
Guys doing this morning? On the topic, I just, as you know, I just came in, so let me get some more under belt, and I'll be glad to speak on it. But I just came into the conversation, so let me get a little bit more insight, and then I'll go ahead and speak.
Okay.
Don't have any.
So we started
yeah, go ahead,
out mom. We started out with the topic, the word fentanyl, but the word fentanyl is only like a component. It's just like an additive to and behavior that's likely behind one taking a risk with their life with a drug that is known to kill. It's not speculated. There's no guesswork. It's known to kill. And if we have people who deliberately use it knowing that they could die. So that's where we rolled off of that and went into the understanding of where one has to be about themselves to risk themselves. And the fair conclusion that we came to is that obviously they don't think they have much value. Because they risk so much. It's like this. Let me give an example. We got cars all around my house, right? Somebody came and went in a car. One of these cars is parked in the driveway. And on, you know, we got cars in the well, I ain't saying the garage, but because we got stuff in the garage. We got cars all out. Somebody came and went in the car and took something out of the car. Now, we got cameras. We got multi-families in the household, and my question is, why would somebody risk so much for so little? They must not think much about it. So if I came out there and caught them, I wouldn't punish them. I would try to get an understanding. Like, hey, man, let me ask you something, man. You went in my car, not knowing what was in it, and you risked your life for something you didn't even know. What the plus sign was, and so help me understand, what is it about yourself that you don't covet to where you would take a risk like that? And that's where we're working on now to plant the seed with not only the person that may be using the drug or contemplating using the drug, but the people around them who see them. What do we all do to make sure that we understand that we have value that deserves to be protected?
What you just struck up, I was about to respond to, and that is that go back to your analogy of the car. The reason I'm breaking into the car is because I have no alternative. I have no other way to bring value to myself. Matter of fact, if I'm breaking in, that means that I'm not concerned, quote unquote, about value, self-value. I'm already, and I very loosely use this, I'm already dead. I'm still breathing, I'm alive, but I'm already emotionally dead. And I have no other way of it. Correct. I have no other way to forge, move forward. Forage for goods and whatnot, because I don't have that same motivation to do anything constructive. Again, I don't have an alternative. So what does a drug, from my experience, what does a drug user do? They fall back because it's the easiest thing to do. It's not the high. It's the easiest thing to do. I don't have value, and I have come to understand as a user that as long as I'm high, I can float through existence. And as long as I can continue to keep that high, then to me, I'm worth something. When in reality, I'm killing myself. I'm slow fentanyl, weed, alcohol, cocaine. They used to call them hubbas. I don't know if the folks in the audience remember that, but hubbas used to be your rock cocaine. At least that's what it was during the time that I was involved in this in San Francisco. So it's value. If I don't have value, self-value, if I don't have self-awareness, then yes, I'm going to fall each and every time to fentanyl, alcohol, weed, and I'll just use those four, and continue on until either I do better or the drug takes me off the planet. I don't have the value to stay here. I don't have the will to stay here. And I think that's one of the major problems with drug use. I don't have the will to do anything else. The drug provides for a user. The drug provides everything that I need. When in reality, I am slowly, slowly killing myself. I'll stop at that point.
Well, to restart, I'll visit once again my acknowledgement on a personal level on what I've observed, because I'm not the one. I don't have a one size fit all remedy for any of these concerns. I just have experience. I just have observation, and by the grace of God, I have the ability to do these assessments and be able to report them. I've used this analogy before, like Tim, myself, and the brothers, a lot of the brothers that are in our healing circle were like the scouts that went out in the frontier when the pioneers were trying to find a place to settle. And so the scouts went out miles and miles into the wilderness to see what would be the report back to the wagon train, what would be the best way to go. And those who made it back had a report. Those who didn't, well, we knew which way he went. Let's not go there. So we are the scouts that survived, and we are able to report. We are able to report to the wagon train what direction is likely to be the best direction for us to go as a family, as a group. And that's why we do what we do. So back to the idea that you're proposing, Joe, I heard it, and it sounds, you know, very relative about one not having the understanding about self and about value and about what they have to protect. And that's kind of like what we attempt to stimulate here, is just give some thought to it. When we work with the kids that we work with, we urge them to get into their creative force and not consistently rely upon their electronics for every answer, or for every stimuli, or for every visual aid, or every audio aid. We take that stuff away from them. We put paper in front of them. We put little materials and have them create. And when I go to the classes that I go to, especially elementary, when I go in there, they draw it, and they give me, I got all their drawings. They draw stuff and they give it to me. Mr. Wilson, look what I did. And I said, oh, you know, you're getting better. Yeah. Oh, did you come out of your head with that? Was that? Ooh, that's creativity. That's magic. So we're talking about introducing each other to the magic that exists in us, that was gifted to us. And we're bartering off and compromising our magic for this thing outside of us that only has a temporary or potentially permanent, when it comes to fentanyl, it has a permanent effect if you take too much. It has a temporary effect if you take just enough. So we're on the same page, Joe, and I think we're moving towards stimulating more conversation and more movement toward a kind of a formula to propose to our audience so that everybody won't be hands-off and like, oh, I don't want to talk about it because I don't know what to do. Because a lot of times that's what I think it is. It's like, I don't want to talk about that because I ain't got no idea how to deal with that. Well, we're coming up with ideas, and we're stimulating you to expand on those ideas so that we can address this scourge that's happening in our community.
There's not enough. I was about to comment. There's not enough of us scouts as there once were. We all know that at one time our entire community was of scouts. If Sister Maybell saw you on Saturday making a fool of yourself, that elder would say something. And our families at the time knew one another well enough to where Sister Maybell would then report that. We knew that that report was good when we were young. We knew that that report was, or somebody was going to say something. Because when I got home, Mom, Dad, at the time, would speak on what they had been informed of my accent. That whole aspect of our community is non-existent. And so when you use the word scouts, a scout is also an individual who gives valuable information. The most important thing about a scout is the information that they gather and bring back. We don't have that any longer except for men such as ourselves who have been in that arena, who have approached difficult problems with a solution, with an alternative. And I think that's one of the major reasons why we are constantly talking about the use of stimulants, whatever category that stimulant might be in, because there's no alternative. The kids that bring you the drawing and their creative side, that is a decent aspect to continue on. And mushroom, that's something that it the light shines when you're there. When you and Brother Tim are there in the classroom, the light is on. But as soon as you two men leave, the light goes back out. There's no continuous of alternative and to moving forward with the spiritual and alternative. And I think that scouts, that's one of our jobs. That's one of our major jobs, is to continue, regardless of circumstance, continue to shine light on a difficult problem.
Thank you for that, Brother Joe. We're going to go to a commercial. I have another caller that's calling in. We're going to get to them and bring them up to speed of what we're talking about. Today's topic, you all, is fentanyl, the new high. People know this is a deadly drug, but still use it to get high. It is the Wise Words of One Gone Show on Blog Talk Radio. The number to call is 515-608-9861. That's 515-608-9861. We'll go to commercial and we'll be right back.
Hooked on Fishing and Not on Violence presents
Family
Skate Night.
Killing as one.
And it's all taking place at King's Skate Country in the city of Elk Grove, Thursday, November 30th, 2023.
From 6:30 to 8:30 p.m.
And in light of this special occasion, the key word is free.
Free?
Free. Everyone free. Free entry, free food, great music equals fun for you and the family. King Skate Country, 1404 Franklin Boulevard, Elk Grove, California. We'll see you there.
November 30th, right?
Right. Peace and blessings, King. Hooked on Fishing and Not on Violence presents
the Men's Healing Circle.
Brothers healing together.
Brothers healing together.
Join us every Wednesday night from 6 p.m. to 7:30 p.m. 2251 Florin Road, Sacramento, California, inside the Obama Room. The Men's Healing Circle is a place where men uplift, encourage, and inspire each other to be better through personal testimony, dialogue, self-reflection, self-improvement, and positive affirmation. Again, that's 2251 Florin Road, Sacramento, California, in the Obama Room. Come out and pledge to greatness with your fellow brother.
And that's right. We'll be there tonight, man. I heard that the Youth Healing Circle was dynamite last night. My wife and a few other sisters went through, along with Brother Mac, with the mental health and anger management curriculum, right? And so I want to give a shout out to them. Also, we ran into a youth last night that I said to Marvell, I said, "Hey, Mr. Marvell, this is some work for Brother Joe." And so, Brother Joe, I'm going to introduce you to a young man who's about to become a father. He's talking with good sense, but he also know nonsense, right? And without further ado, I'm going back to our host, Mr. Marvell. Ms. Marvell.
Sir.
So give me a recap of what's going on. First, let me let the caller that just called in introduce themselves. I want you to give a recap, and let's see if they can climb on board and ride this ship to glory. Caller from the 916-821, go ahead and introduce yourself.
It's Uncle Bobo.
Hey, Bobo.
What's going on?
All right, so hold on 1 sec. No, that's Bobo, Big Bobo.
Oh, okay.
Not Brother Bo, not Brother Bo. Okay, hold on, Marvin. Hold on. I need you to give a recap.
Okay. So Uncle Bobo, we started out talking about fentanyl and the fact that this is a deadly drug that people are deliberately using. And so that contradiction sort of makes you scratch your head, right? So in analysis, what we have come to is that those who are doing it and deliberately doing it, matter of fact, Mr. Tim said he talked to a young man, and the young man told him he gets off on the life or death risk, that he's almost, that he bring himself back from the brink of death, and that's the thrill for him. So we roll from there into just general drug usage and what it is that's likely to be a part of someone's lack of willingness to acknowledge spirit, acknowledge how to deal with their emotions, and how to actually develop self-assurance and take the risk of their life using a drug. Because every time you use a drug in your life, I don't even care, it don't even have to be fentanyl. It could be any kind of drug, because you don't know what effect it's going to have. You can't predict what the ill effect is going to be. So we're risking our lives. So that's where we kind of like ruminating in that, bringing forth the message that there's something in one's lack of knowledge of value and lack of knowledge of one's importance that makes it so that risk is something that they're willing to take. And we're asking why.
Okay. Me personally, the risk of doing the stuff is like something in your life ain't right, you know. Something has really got you really done of what you want to, you don't want to just put a bullet in your head. You're doing it the slow way by doing that drug to know that can kill you. And if it do you low, hey, I got high doing it. But from my personal experience, like you said, it go to the brink of death and then come back. It's like a speedball. Speedball was you know, heroin user was shoot some heroin and do coke and go back up and down. It's the same thing. Like, you take that fentanyl, it take you down. And then when you come back, it's an adrenaline rush that you get from going that far and then coming back. So he's addicted, that person's addicted to the drug itself, and then to the natural drug of the adrenaline rush you get from coming back. And how I know is personal experience. Back in the 80s, I was on that crack real bad. I would smoke and smoke and smoke and smoke, and my heart beat out. And I know I could get a heart attack and die any second, but hey, give me some more. Not because I really wanted to get high some more is the fact I was really trying to kill myself because I was on the stuff and I couldn't get off of it because I was, you know, the addiction thing. When I finally did get off of it, let me back up a little bit. When I was doing the drugs, I was doing all kinds of stuff that could got me killed to get the drugs. I was robbing people. Now, I wasn't robbing Joe Public. I went straight to the dope man. He got what I want. I cut out the middleman. I robbed the dope man and run with my gun and getting shot at all day, every day. So when I quit doing the drug, I still kept doing stuff like robbing the dope man or selling swiggle, we used to call it, fake drugs. For the I was still addicted to that adrenaline rush, which was worse than the dope. Because now I call myself trying to get a job, but I'm still out here doing dumb stuff, risking my life just for the high of being, you know, somebody chasing me with a gun. And even though I went through, I really can't explain, but I do understand why the people on the fentanyl is doing what they're doing. And like you said, the guy who takes himself to the brink and come back, he's addicted to the drug and an adrenaline rush. And what he's on the drug for is something in his life is not, you know, maybe he lost his girlfriend or he can't go see his kids because his ex is acting crazy or he just feels like he ain't worth being here no more for whatever reason. That's the part of what I was on that crack. My daughter's mama took my daughter away from me. And that was my whole life of being a daddy. So when that was took away from me, I had no reason to want to live no more. And that's why I got on the drugs and then, like I said, and got to the fact of where I was really actually trying to kill myself doing it. And thank God for change, though. I'm much better now.
Excellent. Glad to hear it, brother. Obviously, that's the case because, you know, when you do self-reflection and you divulge, that means that it's behind you. A lot of folks are in the grips. And it's difficult for them to acknowledge what they're going through until they get through it. But that recognition was very, very powerful in regard to the body. The body has reactions. The body has see one of the factors that I've observed about drugs themselves and why. Drugs, the gravity of the drugs is such an easy sell is because drugs duplicate or escalate things that are already happening in our body. So they're sort of like coordinate, right? It's like you when you have the dopamine factor, which is the pleasure center, everybody likes to have pleasure. And when you have something that heightens that feature in your body or in your system or in your brain, then it's like, give me more, give me more, give me more, right? And then if you want to be relaxed and laid back to the highest degree, then there's the depressant. And then if you just want to go ziggity-boo, you got the hallucinogen, right? But, but the body has components that are somewhat similar to what the drug does in the first place, and that adrenaline piece you just defined, that's some valuable acknowledgement, is that once you trigger something and then you get on the brink and that adrenaline kicks in, then that adrenaline becomes like a 1-2 punch in the system, right? And I appreciate that, man, because I can clearly see how that could be defined by someone. But first of all, we acknowledge that the person that is experiencing this 1-2 punch obviously has thrown in the towel about their value. Mm-hmm. And that's where we're working to stimulate folk to give more attention to is the value factor. You know, if you don't know what your value is, then you're susceptible to any and all of these things. So it's important to like do introspection and find out where your value is. Each individual, find out where your value is and pour into that and give that a shot before you decide to give something outside of yourself the opportunity to be, and you'll be at the mercy of its next action or reaction. So well put, brother. I appreciate that. That adrenaline piece, that was powerful.
Right on, right on. But you want to know something of strange, and I don't mean to be contradictory, but what made me want to quit, and it's honest to God truth, is that I was half high off the crack, and I smoked some weed that day. I had quit smoking weed. I smoked some weed, and the weed said, look at everybody out here. This is what you look like. And I seen it. And I had a pocket full of dope. And I said, hey, y'all, come here. They said, what's up? I said, here. And I gave away all the dope that I had that day just because I smoked some weed. And I went home to my mom and I'm like, look, mom, I'm done with this crap. Let's go get my baby. And that was the end of it for me. It just sounds funny that another drug helped me get off one drug. And I know that sounds kind of contradicted, but that was how it happened.
Hey, actually not at all, because
I agree.
Revelation, I think, comes from God, right? And so when a revelation occurs, it cuts through everything. Look, that's why I know the marijuana that's circulating now, everybody's going to talk about how natural it is, but the truth to me is, this weed is not natural. This weed is supernatural. This weed is like a narcotic. Cause I was in the grips of the crack usage. I was at the peak of my crack usage, playing dice with a guy, and he gave me a hit off of one of them things he had, and it cut through the crack. I was laughing, acting goofy, and wanted some snacks. And you don't snack when you're in the grips of the crack, you don't want to eat. But when you're in the grips of the marijuana, you want to eat. They cut through there. So I understand where that opened up the door for revelation for you when it cut through that syndrome that we find ourselves in with the cocaine, and it opened it up so that the revelation could occur. Because if you made that decision. Oh, you made that, took that action by a decision that was made through the Spirit of God, my brother, through the Spirit of God that revelation came through you, and you stood behind it. It wasn't you. It was the Spirit of God, and I appreciate you being a vessel for that, but everybody is not going to be like that.
Right. Yeah, no, that I do agree. I do agree, exactly. What works for one don't always work for the other. I got you on that.
Yeah, so you know you see you obviously you had an anointment, or you had a conduit to a connection that allowed you to be freed just by that spirit alone. Obviously, a lot of people that I was around people that you know I knew that they were spiritually and emotionally bankrupt, right? And so I can only be hopeful for them, even though, because I was that dude that always was optimistic about coming out. I was telling the story earlier. I don't know if you heard it, but where I used to get money, and everybody trying to work me, you know, and everybody would be playing the games. Little girls be pulling up their little dress, faking like they're going to come up, you know, just to get the dope from me. But they didn't know I was glad to share the dope, because if I did all the dope myself, I would have killed myself, right? But then when we started getting in and I started talking, because I'm, you know, everybody's looking at me. So instead of me being more forthright about the usage, I'm talking about recovery. I'm talking about, hey, man, one of these days, we're going to come up out of this. We're going to come up out of it. And they would look at me, and that's what they would say, Uncle Bobo. Say, man, why did you freeze that, man? You blowing my eye.
Yeah.
So I was that dude. So there's a lot of spiritual and emotional bankruptcy that's important to penetrate before we could even get to the step where one would be willing to observe whether or not they have value, because a lot of the value systems have been like dirt, been kicked on the values. You know, it's hard for us to recognize our value because the marketing says that if you don't have this, then you ain't nothing. If you ain't doing this, then you ain't nothing. And there ain't no in between. It's like, oh, you got to be all or nothing. And that's the marketing ploy that's been operating and keeping us off balance, to think that we don't have value unless it's to the highest degree. So, you know, I appreciate you sharing that, man, your revelation. And I'm glad that revelation was true for you and it's working for you, because now you can help pour in to somebody else who's struggling.
And with that being said, Uncle Bobo, I don't know if you opening up a bag of chips or hitting the plate you eating off of, but you got a lot of background disturbance, so I put you on mute, and I'm going to bring you back. What we found out, Brother Marvell and a few other listeners, is that any other sound other than your voice, it kind of like comes out over your voice when we listen at these replays. So I put you on mute. And the thing is, if you have something that you're doing, just mute your phone so you can stay in tune with what we're doing, and then you can unmute yourself to talk. With that being said, it's the Wise Words of One Gone Show. I'm going to take one more commercial, and then we're going to continue on. What I do know is that these brothers that are on here to the listening audience, they are I want to say experts at what they're speaking about, and what make them an expert because they have experience. It is the Wise Words of One Gone Show, and we're on Blog Talk Radio. The number is 515-605-9861. That's 515-605-9861. We'll be right back.
Hooked on Fishing and Not on Violence presents Youth Healing Circle every Tuesday night from 6 p.m. to 7:30 p.m.
Youth Healing Together.
2251 Florin Road, Sacramento, California. Inside of Room 67. Our Youth Healing Circle is a forum where we dive into discussions about drugs, bullying, school, and life skills. We provide a safe space and inform our youth
that sometimes it is okay to not be okay.
During our Youth Healing Circle, our youth may hear from other youth as well as experienced adults how to problem solve and navigate unforeseen complexities that we all run into in life. 2251 Florin Road, Sacramento, California. That's Room 67 every Tuesday night from 6 p.m. to 7:30 p.m. For more information, text or call 916-889-0105. Let's heal together.
Hey, man, you got your fishing pole?
Got my fishing pole?
Yeah, man, we going fishing.
Man, I ain't going no fishing, man. I got this strap. These streets is hot.
Hey, man, you need to call Hooked on Fishing, Not on Violence at 916-889-0105. Hooked on Fishing, Not on Violence. It's brought to you by Wise Words of One Gone Show, and we can work it out in. Hooked on Fishing and Not on Violence is taking the guns out of our kids' hands and putting a rod and reel in them. We are located at 2251 Florin Road in South Sacramento. That's Hooked on Fishing, Not on Violence. Join the crew and save a kid. You know how we do.
So I'm opening everyone's phone line. We have 44 minutes left. 44 minutes left to get the information out to the masses and to uplift each other as we do so. Without further ado, Brother Marvell, it's back to you.
Yes, sir. Thank you very much. You know, we talked about earlier, Uncle Bobo, if you're still on, we talked about We talked about the responses to our loved ones and people we care about that might be caught in the grips of drug usage. And I think you can attest to some degree, if not full degree, of how you used to work people over that didn't know anything but to cater to you, thinking that they were helping you. They call it enabling. And we talked about that.
Okay.
Yeah, so now I think, because what we're doing now, as we start defining some of the concerns, we're putting together committees. We have a committee that we're putting together this evening to address, like, some of the concerns that happen where we're using each other. Like, we had an incident yesterday and a couple of days ago that brought us to the attention how important it is for us to have committees and bodies of men who make sure that we present certain information to stop people from working each other over and all that. So now I think you help stimulate another committee, or you might want to participate in a committee that addresses the subject of enabling, right? I think that our general population would do well to have seminars and presentations that define what enabling is and the balancing of accountability, the enabling system. And I don't know if you weren't here, so just in short, one of the things, if you take somebody in because you know that they beat down and they've been, you know, like they've been up for 3 days and they need sleep, then you love them, so you put them in the house and let them lay and all that. When they get up, they should have a task or responsibility to offset your generosity, because what we discovered is that you have care, but they don't. That's probably why they are where they are, because they don't have the emotional or spiritual ability. The bankruptcy of those two things make it so that they really can't care the way you do about them. They can't really afford to care about you, and they'll work you until they get back on their feet, and they'll be back out there again. So we want to talk about putting together seminars and presentations that help people understand how not to do that. And I'm wondering if I can count on you to contribute to that.
When are you thinking about doing it?
Well, we have to. That's what I mean. It's like it's in formulation right now. It's in discussion.
Okay.
That's why we have these discussions, because during the course of these discussions, we conclude that something should be done, and now we're attempting to put it together to get it done. I just would like to know if you have a willingness to contribute whatever it is, whatever time or whatever effort you could share to help bring this thing and make it something tangible and something that we could present to the community.
Yeah, keep me in the loop. I can do that.
All
except
right,
for Tuesdays and Thursdays. Except for Tuesdays and Thursdays,
except
I
for
think
Tuesdays
my baby, that baby basketball practice day.
Right on. Hey, well, maybe Tuesday. Where they practice at?
Over there, the school by Siggy Circle. And with the Ball Out Academy.
So see, you know what? We might be able to throw in some support and come and do, you know, show up at that event to show support for you and yours, because you're doing a wonderful thing, man. You know, you come back to fatherhood, and if you stand in the gap for that, that's something that deserves to be honored. So yeah, but Tuesdays and Thursdays right now. But what we'll do is, because I do a lot of writing, right? So what we'll do is we'll get together and brainstorm, and then I'll draw up something and make it a hard copy and distribute it, and then you know, people can make a decision about whether or not they want to participate or how they can participate. But this is just a formulating stage of taking action. That's what we decide to do on this program is not only talk about the challenge, not only define the challenge, but once we get a clear idea of what needs to be done, we start taking action on it. And we'd like for our listening audience to contribute whatever they can to make sure that we have a good opportunity to get that done. That make sense?
A lot of sense, brother.
Right on. Joe, you still there?
Yes, I am. And I just listened to both of you and the brother. My comment would be, there's not enough men. And to be clarified real quickly, there are a lot of males who wear pants, such as we do, but they are not grounded as men, not yet. And I feel that the men in the audience come join us so that other men can see men actually moving forward. And then men in the audience and listening audience, we need your support and your participation as a man. And that's what's missing real hard in our community, the fact that we menfolk are not visible. And when they see, when young see or someone that's strung out sees someone, they see someone just like them. They don't see the alternative that, you know, once we begin to cover that ground, that there is an alternative to getting high. And you can find yourself some value in yourself by not getting high. I think those two aspects will help. But as men, we got to get not only started, we should have been running. Should have been. But we've been so caught up in what this country has, quote unquote, to offer that we lose sight and have lost sight. And I believe that the committees and men such as ourselves are regaining our sight. And with that, let us move forward.
Right on. See, Joe, so I'm hearing, what I'm hearing you say is that it's important to set the laws of attraction in motion. So I heard you say that there are not enough. But I also heard you say that we can create a model that attracts enough. We can create a model. I'm going to give you an example. When I was in Cleveland, I had a councilman heard me do a presentation, and he propositioned me for 20 hours a week that I would work to go sponsor marches in the community, right? So I had potential politicians, and we had police protection and all that, you know. And I was leading the brigade with a bullhorn saying, up with hope, down with dope, up with hope. Then we march through the communities, right? So we're marching through the communities, and we got our body. But as we're marching through the communities, man, community members start coming out their house, and they got into the march, right? Before we knew it, we might have started out with 23 people. We ended up with 57 people, right? The law of attraction. So if we weren't there visibly demonstrating, then it's not likely that any of those people would have had the notion to come out and stand for their community. But the moment they saw that there was a body there that was serious and consistent and convicted, they came along. So that's what I'm feeling we're going to be able to do. It's like when we went out to the north, right? We went out there as a body. And even though we didn't perform because it rained, people saw us, and then we got some acknowledgments where the kids were calling up members that they knew and said, tell them we said thank you for coming out, just for coming out, not demonstrating, but showing up, right? So I'm optimistic about the laws of attraction. Let's get something visible and watch what happens.
What, Brother Marvell, I can only speak from my experience of being visible and listening to you and Brother Bobo speak on the issue and the laws of attraction. I can only tell you that once I see you with these two eyes, once I experience your energy. I want more of it because I don't have that. I don't have that on a daily basis. What I have is not even bits and pieces. So I will turn to a stimulant of whatever category to get that feeling, as you were saying earlier. But when I get a chance to sit before you, talk to you, look at you, I get that same feeling without having to go to that extra mile of taking that whatever drug there is. And since it's fentanyl, which is the topic, I don't need to touch it. Why? Because I'm getting the same type of emotional feeling that I get from when I take that drug. So it's men being strong enough, unafraid, to step forward. Once the community begins to see that there are black men who are willing to step forward, just as there are Asian men, Hispanic men, white men, there are those three categories of men. We are the only set of men who will come up with an excuse instead of stepping forward. And therefore, with that excuse keeps us null and void. That excuse keeps us back. I'll keep saying and keep trying to live it. Let us step forward. Because once again, when they see, and I'm just using the kids, when they see that there finally is a group of men able to stand and step forward with a alternative, it's just like the Pied Piper. Here they come. Because I want that feeling. I want to be part of that. I'm tired of waking up in a stupor. I want more. I want something different. And I think that we offer that. It's just that, as I said a moment ago, we need manpower. And so, again, I'll make the statement, every man that is listening, if you have the opportunity, please come go with us. Thank you.
Ashe. And so I put everybody on mute for a moment. We're talking about fentanyl, the new high. And, you know, people are getting high off this drug knowing that this is a deadly drug. And the reason I spoke on this is because one of our youth that I ran into, he's not in our program, but he knows kids that are in our program, told me he likes that high because it takes him near to death. And then he's able to come back, and he likes that feeling of almost being dead. Man, that's a cold one, but it's a real one. You're on Wise Words with One Gone. The number is 515-605-9861. That's 515-605-9861. I was hoping my dear friend Mama Chocolate would call in. I asked her to call in, and she's listening to the broadcast, but I need to hear a woman's perspective right now, and it would be an honor to have her speak. Because she knows the in and out of this drug and how this drug is affecting our people, not just our youth, not just our elders, but our people in general, right? And so I'm going to open the phone lines back up. My brother Marvell, brother Joe, and brother Bobo, the line is open. We have 29 minutes until we're off, but please. Give a wise words to, you've been giving them all this whole broadcast, but right now, speak from your heart to the listeners about the drug usage and how one is affecting not them just themselves, but the ones that love them.
I have an appeal, and that appeal is to the listeners and listeners who know someone either in the drug usage or having some challenges emotionally, socially, spiritually, and might be susceptible to the making the drug usage decision. And that appeal is that we not become casual and let social acceptability kick in about what we see going on around us in the drug scourge. We already did it with the marijuana. We went to the, okay, well, weed, who kills somebody about weed? Well, I know some people who kill people about weed. I do. But we got casual, we got relaxed about it because the social acceptability of drug usage is disturbingly casual, right? So I'm appealing that we pour in, give some attention to each other through this broadcast. Call in or make a gesture of concern known so that we could pool our resources, get together and do what we've been doing, form committees and create formats so that we can heighten the consciousness of everybody who has this challenge. Looking at the drug scourge or being a part of the drug scourge or having someone you love caught up in the drug scourge. Most people qualify for one of those categories. So if you do, reach out and let's come together and start making things happen. That's my appeal.
I would like to be able to say to every man that is listening, and I've said it before and I'll keep saying it because it is us who set the bar, us being the men. If you are one that is not afraid and have something that you can actually offer, come join us here at the Healing Circle so that we can move forward. Every one of us as men. It's, a man is not, and I'm just using us as an example, a man is not worth his weight in gold, shall we say, if he has no power. One of the things that manhood shows us is that men, quote unquote, have power, except for us, because we refuse to stick together. I am trying to appeal to each man that is listening. We need you. We need your strength. And plus, we need your knowledge. There are children. There are families who need men. So my appeal is simply to the men who are listening. Join us so that we can, again, make some useful strides forward. Thank you.
Uncle Bobo.
Yeah.
Oh, you.
I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, we can hear you. We waiting on you.
I missed what you said. I'm sorry. What we waiting on?
A final statement from you, whether it's a wise word for our listeners, whether it's some help, a number that you have for them to get connected with, whether it's resources, whether it's just a good word from Uncle Bobo moving forward.
Moving forward, I kind of like this. I put this appeal out on Facebook at least once a year. If you have anybody, young man, anywhere between 12 and 25 that are looking to get help or someone to talk to that's been there, knows what they're going through, because I'm the poster boy of bad decisions growing up. Teenage father, high school dropout, drug addict, gang member, all the things that are negative about us black men, I was all of that at one time. So if you know anybody who's trying to find a way out and needs someone to talk to, come see me. I'm at McClatchy Park every day about 2 o'clock playing cards. I'll put the cards there and come talk with you. It's Uncle Bubba's promise to anybody who wants some help or someone just to talk to who's been where you are right now.
Thank you. I appreciate it. And so I appreciate the panel. I appreciate the brothers talking out and giving their personal experience, because that is what really connects with that are going through what they're going through, a personal connection because of the experience, right? And so you can be a psychiatrist, a psychologist, you can be a doctor, a nurse, you can be all that has extra letters behind your name, but sometimes and most times you're not able to connect with those that really need these services. And so personal experience, someone has been through what I'm going through, and they're telling me this is how they work that thing out and this is how they walk that thing out, I kind of tend to, you know, lean that way, because they have a personal experience. They were where I am, and because of that, I might need to listen just a little bit longer, a little bit harder, to get the message that is coming out of one's mouth. And I got a couple of things I'm going to do right now, is because, you know, normally we play a lot of music on here, right? But these conversations are needed. And so why distort the message with music unless the music has a message? It's Wise Words and One Gone Show. I'm DJ One Gone, and man, we gonna get to this right here, right now.
This is why I say it's the ballot or the bullet. It's liberty or it's death. It's freedom for everybody or freedom for nobody. America today finds herself in a unique situation. Historically, revolutions are bloody. Oh yes, they are. They have never had a bloodless revolution or a nonviolent revolution. That don't happen even in Hollywood. You don't have a revolution in which you love your enemy. And you don't have a revolution in which you're begging the system of exploitation to integrate you into it. Revolutions overturn systems. Revolutions destroy systems. A revolution is bloody. But America is in a unique position. She's the only country in history in a position actually to become involved in a bloodless revolution. The Russian Revolution was bloody. Chinese Revolution was bloody. French Revolution was bloody. Cuban Revolution was bloody. And there was nothing more bloody than the American Revolution. But today, this country can become involved in a revolution that won't take bloodshed. All she's got to do is give the black man in this country everything that's doing. Everything. I hope that the white man can see this. Because if you don't see it, you're finished. If you don't see it, you're going to become involved in some action in which you don't have a chance. We don't care anything about your atomic bomb. It's useless. Because other countries have atomic bombs. When two or three different countries have atomic bombs, nobody can use it. So it means that the white man today is without a weapon. If you want some action, you got to come on down to earth. And there's more black people on earth than there are white people on earth. I only got a couple more minutes. The white man can never win another war on the ground. His days of war victory, his days of background victory are over. Can I prove it? Yes. Take all the action that's going on this earth right now that he's involved in. Tell me where he's winning. Nowhere. Why, some rice eaters ran him out of Korea. Yes, they ran him out of Korea. Race eaters with nothing but gym shoes and a rifle and a bowl of rice. Took him and his tanks and his napalm and all that other action he's supposed to have and ran him across the Yalu. Why? Because the day that he can win on the ground is past. Up in French Indochina, those little peasants rice growers took on the might of the French army and ran all the Frenchmen. You remember Dien Bien Phu? No. The same thing happened in Algeria, in Africa. They didn't have anything but a rifle. The French had all these highly mechanized instruments of warfare, but they put some guerrilla action on them. And a white man can't fight a guerrilla warfare. Guerrilla action takes heart, takes nerve, and he doesn't have that.
That was from Minister Malcolm X. I wanted y'all to hear that because we're dealing with a lot of turmoil in our country, but I want to break it down and let you know that we're dealing with a lot of turmoil in our neighborhoods and in our communities. So let's each one reach one to teach one. Let's teach them the values of life and how to live life. It's not the bling that mean a thing. Oh, you didn't hear me. I said, it's not the bling that means a thing, but it's one's heart and one's forward motion to succeed in honesty. If we can teach that to our young folks, such as Kwanzaa, the seven principles, if we can teach them values at a young age, I know that most of the things that are plaguing our neighborhoods and our communities will cease. But it takes us, like Joe said, it takes men to step up and step out. Be accounted for. Make sure that when you see your brother, you uplift your brother, you encourage your brother, and you inspire your brother to be the best man he could be. The world has looked at us as a problem. The black man has suffered long enough. It is now time, brothers, to stand on truth, stand on each other's shoulders, and reach up over the fence and unlock the gate to let love in our communities. This is the Wise Words with One Gone Show. I'm going to open the phone line up one more time, but I got to give you this one right here because it's dear to my heart. And it means a lot. That means you, 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 and you. I want all my people around me living good, eating good, and feeling good. It is a Wise Words of One Gone show, and I just wanted to let the brothers know that Brother Barry called me yesterday. I was at the game, me and Brother Marvell with some youth, and I really couldn't hear him. But I'm going to give him a call today. I'm going to also, I have to go down to the county jail and speak with a youngster that found himself in juvenile hall now in the big house, right, trying to fight cases. And so I'm going to go uplift that young man and report back to his mom on how his feelings are, being that he has to adjust from being with them young kids to being with grown men now. And so with that being said, man, it is a beautiful day out there. Make sure you stay out the way, but also get in the way. Because a lot of people say, I say, hey, man, how you been doing? Oh, man, I'm just out the way. But you so far out the way, you ain't helping the way. So let's try to help the way while we stay out the way. Anyway, Mr. Marvell, we have 11 minutes. I'm going to let you go ahead on and speak on maybe some of the things that we have going on. But I do want to say this for Brother Joe. Brother Joe, we have a young man that went to the basketball game with us, and I found out yesterday that he's about to become a dad. And so Brother Marvell went to speaking to him, and I as well. But then I told Marvell, I said, well, you know, Joe's been looking to get his hands wet and step into the arena. And so I heard him say that he had a program down in San Francisco working with young men that became fathers, and there's a program that he's a part of. And so we want to direct young men like that to you, Brother Joe. You don't got to go searching for nobody. We're going to make sure that when we run into them, we'll send them to you by a referral. How about that, Brother Joe?
I've got no problem with that whatsoever. As a matter of fact, I appreciate that. You know, real quick, just a comment. While the song was singing about Malcolm and what you had said, Tim, I was thinking of an incident that I was posted near the Ho Chi Minh Trail. Now, that's in Vietnam. I was we were out on a particular assignment. And that particular assignment had B-52 arc, called arc strike. And so they did what, you know, the bombs dropped. The one thing that impressed me in that conflict was how the men of Vietnam stood up. I had 16, 45, 38, M60, 5mm. I had artillery, plus I had a radio where I could actually call for a jet strike. And yet, this one little man decided that against all those odds, still coming after, he was still coming forward. And I said to myself once I was, God gave me the grace to survive Vietnam, that I would obviously never forget that, how one man stood up to all the might, and I'm an eyewitness to this, to all the might that America had at the time during Vietnam, yet you would find at least one that would stand up in opposition. And that's what we need. We need that type of manhood here with us at this time as we tackle some of the things, including fentanyl, that we need to tackle in our community. So, again, I just implore men, come join us so that we can actually move forward constructively. Thank you.
Uncle Bobo.
Yes, sir. You hear me?
Yeah, give us some overview. What are you thinking and feeling right now?
I'm just glad to be here to talk about it. I can stay on it, but we'll get together, we're gonna put something together.
Yeah, I like that. I like that. So let me get some clarity about the – we hadn't mentioned his name before. But the gentleman that Tim was referring to that gave him a call while we were at the game was involved in what we consider to be fraud and duplicity and unfairness to our young people during a raffle last week, right? And Tim had been attempting to call him, and he wasn't responding. But we put him on blast yesterday on the radio. Now, last night he's calling, so that's who we're talking about. We had never mentioned his name, but Tim shared that. So we'll report tomorrow what the results of that conversation end up being.
Okay.
So when we talk about war, automatically there's violence. You know, there's violence for a cause, right? Somebody standing for a cause, and the other one, and who's on the other side may have a cause, and then a lot of times they're just because you attack me, now I've got to defend myself, right? But yet in this instance, our warfare clearly to me seems to be emotional and spiritual, because we're a people so energetic that whatever energy kicks in, it kicks in with power. And most of the time it's anger, resentment, bitterness, envy, right? And that's what we talk about, and that's what we urge each other to consider, to resist the power of envy, anger, and resentment to kick in, because what it does as a rule is it overcalls your spirituality. So we're always talking about those energies and talking about the of plus effects and the ill effects of where we put our energy. So we're as a group of men and folks that come on these broadcasts are bringing attention to the importance of exercising methods to deal with those energies when they come. When you feel that resentment, when you feel that envy, when you feel that greed, when you feel that anger, stop and acknowledge it. Stop and acknowledge it and practice working to not allow it to build up a momentum, because that momentum has ill effect on not only how you think about yourself, but how people see you, and then you don't become trustworthy anymore because you can't control your emotions, because you might fly off and do something or say something that's untoward to someone, and they don't want to be around you. And we're trying to get closer. We're not trying to be more distant. So we have to work to make sure that we give each other an opportunity to express ourselves with the freedom, free of that charge of anger, resentment, bitterness, envy, greed. And that's why we work so hard to carry these messages on air. Each individual that's in the listening body, if you meet that responsibility to any degree and start practicing it, that's how we're going to become closer. That's the relativity. It's like when I smoke cigarettes, I had relationships with people that smoke cigarettes. And I didn't even have to like them. I just know that we smoke cigarettes. So, you know, we was cool because of that. That's the only reason. When I stopped smoking, now I couldn't stand the smell of it. Now I can't stand being around people who smoke. Now, I'm not saying I don't like those people, but I am saying that when I'm around them, I encourage them to consider not smoking now. So that's kind of like the body of what we do here, is to continue to pour in to the consciousness of the value of the people that are of the most creative, has the potential for the most excellence, is the most trusting and caring of people. And we can't allow ourselves to be deluded to think that we're other than that. What say you, gentlemen?
Coming together, we need follow through on top of that. You know, we just say we should stop and think about what you do before you do it. But if it's just you doing it, you'd be like, ain't nobody watching me or nobody keeping me accountable. So what we got to do is when we get together is buddy system. If you got kind of a similar problem as I got, I'll be your buddy or you know, I check on you, you check on me, how my day went or how my week went, however long, you know, time you put between. But we have to have someone to hold us accountable or just know that we have someone that's there to help. That would be a big help right there. You know what I'm saying? Because it's easy to say, oh, yeah, I'm going to get mad at this or I'm this and that. Oh, no, I need to check myself. Yeah, I can tell you I'm going to do that, but when I get mad, ain't nobody checking me. I'm going to stay mad and go and do what I do. From my experience, that's how I get down, and I know it's wrong. I think about after I went off, oh, I shouldn't have acted like that. You know what I mean? But if I have someone checking me every day, hey, Bo, did you watch what you said or watch how you acted today? And I'll say no or yeah, but then after a while, I know that you're going to check me later. That keeps me in mind state that, okay, even though no one's here, I know Brother Tim gonna call me and check me if I've been checking myself today. You know what I mean? So now I'm gonna be able. I want to say yes, Tim. I checked myself today. Okay, did you check yourself, Tim? Yes, I did. And then we get it. And then now it becomes a habit of checking yourself.
Right on.
Because like you said, if we just on our own. We ain't been checking ourselves. We'll make you think, oh, just because I said I'm going to do it or you asked me to do it, I'm going to just do it automatically. And we need to hold ourselves accountable to a buddy or someone to help me through this, with this. You know what I'm saying?
Okay. All right, brother, we're going to have to intercede because we only got about a few seconds. I didn't want you to get cut off in midstream. That's an excellent idea to develop relationships and have that trust that's necessary to confide in someone. So with that, we'll close with that. Find a buddy that you can confide with and hold accountable and be willing to account to.
Yeah, that's it. Yes, sir. Yes, sir.